You might be saying, Mr. Chaz, you did 3 days of the conference and you said you're going to do a fourth day, but you didn't do it. And you're right, I did not until today. But I actually did you one better. And I've invited the master instructor who was orchestrating the Conscious Discipline Conference, the infant toddler one in Orlando. And she's here with us today for a one-on-one conversation to talk about an emotional, controversial topic called biting. You're going to get so much from this episode. It's going to be so helpful. As always, you can get my online course in the show notes, or you can get the Conscious Discipline book in the show notes. Whatever you get, it's going to be massively helpful for you. Enjoy the episode.
What's my name?
Mr.
What's my name?
Mr.
What's my name?
You know, transitions can be stressful, changes, lack of structure can be very stressful. So I would think, lots of things to reduce stress would include having predictability. We talked a lot during that week of CD1, where we talk so much about the importance of visuals so that their day is almost like the whole entire day is choreographed, and we've got pictures to really let them know we're doing this today. And it teaches them that we're really approaching safety first. So we're helping to keep them safe. And so that's a big aspect of reducing the stress.
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching podcast. And today, y'all, I know I say this like maybe nearly every episode, but this episode about biting is going to be spectacular. This is going to be one of those episodes I refer people to all the time because it is such an emotional topic. I have someone who speaks about it so well. And this is actually the master instructor from the Conscious Discipline Conference I was at, the infant toddler one, where I did 3 podcast episodes. I was talking about kind of summarizing the day and the information. And I was getting the information from this woman right here. She's spectacular. Learn from her. You are blessed to be in her presence. But I'm gonna let her introduce herself, and then we'll get jumping right into the conversation because there's so much to talk about. And there's actually a little bit, as beautiful as everything she has to say is, there is a moment where I think I may disagree a little bit on some things. We'll see what happens. But it's gonna be a really great episode. Without further ado, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Right. Awesome. I just feel so like giggly, all the kind things that you've said about me. So no pressure, right? So I'm Elizabeth Montero Cheflo. And as you said, I'm a master instructor for Conscious Discipline. And I have been for over 18 years or so. And it's just been such a blessing to have this information in my tool belt, in my headspace, just in my heart, all of that, because it's really been huge. I was a former special ed teacher, and I'm also a parent. So, you know, whatever skills I can definitely have within myself, so beneficial for both of those roles too. And just as a human, it is quite helpful. So yeah, and I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to talk about biting because, as you said, yeah, it's a hot topic. It is definitely, it brings out all the emotions in all of us. So yeah, let's do this.
Okay. We always start off with a general question. Why do toddlers bite? What's going on here? This is
And so it's different, right, with different ages. So if we're talking about our babies, so 5 to 7 month olds, they're biting because it's painful. They've got a lot of pain in their mouth while they're teething, all that kind of stuff. When they get to about 8 to about 13 or 15 months old, they get a little excited. And so they're just beside themselves. So maybe excitement kind of takes over, and maybe there's biting that could be fueled by that. Now toddlers, where we might kind of go, uh-oh, you're starting to develop some language. You shouldn't be doing this, all that kind of stuff. So that's why it probably triggers us a little bit more. But a couple of things, biting just in general can also come from stress. So it could be also a child who's stressed, perhaps because they're having difficulty communicating, or it could be, of course, their expressive vocabulary, but it also could be their receptive vocabulary. So they're not being understood, or they can't understand. They're struggling with some of that. So I would say a lot of times it's, if we had to put it into two different buckets, I would say they're stressed. It could be from stress, and it could also be kind of struggling with communication, which also makes sense. And the one thing, and in particular with toddlers, is that biting is really effective. I gotta say, because right, you bite, you could have some very limited language, but you bite and you're good to go, because you now have the toy that you wanted. You've cleared the space because nobody's around you at that time. So I don't know. I mean, toddlers are kind of looking at us like, so what seems to be the problem? Why is everybody else so so upset at me at this moment? And so that's sort of what throws them a little bit for a loop and maybe frustrates us as well. So yeah. Yeah. So I would say, to answer your question, I would say communication, lacking communication, and also stress.
Yeah. 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 So lacking communication and stress for kind of the toddlers. And let's, because I find, let's kind of define, when you say toddlers, what age group are you talking about? Because I find people say toddlers for like all kind of sorts of age groups. I just want to be clear. What age group are you talking about when you say toddlers?
Probably like 15 to 36 months or so. Yeah. Is that, what about you? What do you
No, say? That's how I would say it too. But sometimes people, even like the kind of preschool, the 3 or 4, sometimes people still refer to them as toddlers, as I have found out, but I'd say 15 to 36 is about right. You said that for kind of like the younger, the babies, it could be teething, discomfort. A little bit older, 8, 13, it is, you know, just overexcited. You know, we see this a lot of times with, you know, I hear about a lot of times with parents too, just, you know, like, why are they biting me? And sometimes in response, like, I need to eliminate this behavior right now. This is not okay. Like, you might think it's okay, but I'm going to teach you right now. And so I'm going to bite you back. And it's going to be the last time you bite, because you need to learn that biting hurts. And the only way you're going to learn about this primitive action and the consequences of the action is by me biting you too. So is that the appropriate response? Should we be biting our children back to get them to stop biting? And if not, what else can we do?
Yeah. Well, no, I wouldn't recommend biting a child, because then obviously, you know, anything that we do to a child reinforces the behavior. And in that case, we're reinforcing behavior that we don't want to see. I think taking a step back, I would say, instead of our mindset being, I need to stop that behavior, maybe we shift just a touch and we think of it more so as, how could we possibly transform this behavior? And I always, you know, and when we kind of go with, and you heard me say this a million times at the Institute, right? All you know, behavior is a form of communication. So biting is exactly that too. It's a form of communication. It's, I wanted the toy, and this is the best possible means I have in order to get that toy. Until you possibly teach me a different way of doing that. And now this is the hard part, because as I said, biting is pretty effective, except for what's happening to the other person on the other end, right? You know, how can I now create a new behavior, a replacement behavior, a transformation, let's say, behavior that is equally, if not more effective than the biting itself? So I think that if we kind of take that step back and shift from, I got to stop the behavior, to how can I transform it by giving them perhaps a replacement skill. So let's say it's the baby, or the the 9 month old. So before they're even toddlers. So they, maybe the 9 month old gets really excited and bites at that moment. I might respond with ouch, so that they know, as you said, right? We want to let them know that that hurt and it's not something that I like, but here, let's try it a different way. So it might be that they bit because they're excited. So what would be a replacement phrase or word that would define excitement? You know, it could be something like yay or wow or something that would replace that instead. So it could be that they're looking for, what can I do differently this time? So it's, for example, if a child is biting because they wanted the toy, then the replacement behavior is going to be, in essence, or the goal is to put their hand out and say, my turn. But when they're 15 months old, they may not have that particular skill just yet. So it's going to take some time to build that. So one of the things I really highly recommend is teaching the skill when they are calm, relaxed, and as we've talked about, you know, in their higher centers of the brain, and the adult is also in their higher centers of the brain. That's the time to teach whatever skill it is. So let's say if the skill is to express excitement by saying yay or wow, then when things are going really well, then we say yay or whatever phrase that is that you want to replace. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so, and then, go ahead. Go ahead.
So when they're biting because they're excited, then you want to take those times where other exciting things are happening, things are going well, and you want to just really kind of model for them like how to express excitement and by saying yay, wow, or whatever, so that they kind of learn to express excitement in a similar way.
Yeah. And I think we do that organically anyways, especially with that age group, right? When they do something or they achieve something, right? Don't we automatically clap and go, yay, you did it. Yeah. You know, things like that. And then if they have enough of that experience during those calm times outside of the bite moment, then it's going to eventually stick as, okay, so when I'm excited, instead of biting, I can go, yay, wow. And that would be for more of like the 9 month old or the 10 month old as well.
Okay, so what do you do in that moment when the overexcited 8 month old bites? So this isn't one of those moments. Maybe you're working on it. You're practicing the skill. We know it takes time. In that moment, you're sitting on the couch, or maybe you're in a school setting and they bite. What do you do? You see that on brother, on peer, on yourself. What's the appropriate response to where we can be helpful?
Yeah, definitely. And as you might also have parents who are listening to this, nursing mothers, that certainly doesn't feel good when that happens when you're nursing. But if they're in play or you're nursing or at any moment, I think key thing number one is, because our state is going to regulate their state, we have to make sure that the adult stays calm. In all of these scenarios that we're going to be talking about moving forward, the adult must walk into the space regulated. Otherwise, it's going to stress the child even more so than they're already kind of coming into the moment. So that's, I think that's number one, and that's key. And that's definitely hard at that moment. So I would say in the moment, I like to go with ouch, so that they know. And it's not a playful ouch, like ouch, you know, because then that sounds like, okay, it's a game, let's play. And it sends a mixed message. So if it's at a time, you know, when they're in play or something, I might say ouch. And then I pause, and I maybe redirect that child pretty quickly and gently into another, maybe another, to play in another area or another toy, or kind of move them away from the situation. So if they are biting another child at that moment, ouch, come play over here so that you can be safe. So if we're talking about more so prior to being a toddler, I would say, but also even with some of our toddlers, you can start off with that technique. So it's ouch, and then move them towards something that they can play with or do safely at that moment. I would say that's in the moment, but
yeah,
you know, really where the magic happens is what you do outside of the moment. And I know we're going to get into that as well.
Yeah. And my thought process of why to do the ouch and to redirect is that is the consequence of the action is not, you know, you get bitten back or you get Tabasco sauce on your tongue or something like that. It is how you impacted another person. Right. And the reason for a person to change your behavior is their connection with other people and how that impacts other people. So the idea is saying, ouch, it's helping them recognize kind of the consequence of their action that hurts.
That's so spot on. And as well, it shares, it allows the adult also in this case to model an assertive voice, how we want others to treat us. So saying to someone, ouch, that, you know, and that basically also sets the limit. So it shows the direct consequence in that moment. And it also helps to set the limit that this is behavior that I don't necessarily like at that. So it should send a pretty clear message. And the more consistent we are with how we respond in that moment, the better, the more efficient and the quicker the biting is going to get transformed, because we got to move quickly in this, because you know from being in the classroom, if you have one child who's biting, then you're going to have 10 in the next week or so, because it is very contagious, because the practice is so very effective. And so they get right into that for sure. So yeah, so I would say it sets limits. It also shares what the consequence in that particular moment is. But here's the thing, you know, with the age group that we're talking about, with our twos and even our young threes, the tricky thing is that everything that you're saying, you know, the relationship with another person or how my behavior impacts another person in front of me. Yes, the key is that I have a connection with that person. So if I see that they're hurt, then it starts to tap into that skill of empathy to go, oh, wow, my behavior might have impacted this other individual. But the age group that we're talking about is really just their perspective taking is emerging in these years. So yes, we're two. And so yes, I am the center of the universe. So, you know, twos and teens, of course, but our 2 year olds, this is starting to emerge. So that's why it's helpful for us to know that it's not something that they already have developed within there. So that we can be really a little extra patient with them, because of course it can be so frustrating to have, and especially if you're a classroom teacher, have kids that bite, because you certainly don't want to send any child home with, you know, accident reports and all of that. Our job is to keep them safe. But if we can be real patient in this process, it's going to impact how we arrive in a biting situation. It's going to help us stay more regulated, understanding that, okay, this makes sense. It makes sense that the child bit. Now yeah. I can show them a different way of doing it. And that just sort of helps to regulate me, rather than that child's trying to make my life miserable and trying to make my job even harder than it already is. And, you know, I don't get paid enough for this. Yeah. So, you know, and so it's whatever it takes to help regulate me, and it'll help me show up in a different, more composed way.
Yeah. Let's actually dial it back a little bit before we go into talking about children who take toys and who are wanting a toy. Maybe it's because they're wanting something. Toddlers who are, you know, they're not 8 months old, they're toddlers. Mm-hmm. Before we go into that, I would love to hear more about what the prevention strategy, because you kind of mentioned it. What are the ways that we can prevent it so that the biting is less likely to happen?
Yeah. I think, a couple things kind of fall into that category of prevention, right? So we want to make sure that kids have the opportunity to receive stimulation in the mouth. So that happens by biting and chewing foods and teething rings. I mean, that's why, there's so many great things out there, but, even a lot of times it's just a cold towel that we freeze, a wet towel that we freeze in the freezer, and they can kind of chew on some of that. So there's some sensory integration that we're also including in there because, a lot of the kids that I have worked with in the past that would exhibit biting behaviors, even into fours and fives. So some kids with special needs and high stress situations, we would make sure that we always had like a crunchy snack station so they could chew on Cheerios, things that are safe for them to receive that stimulation and in the mouth, even brushing teeth, things that just naturally happen throughout the day that might be very helpful to get that input. Because sometimes kids might bite because they're lacking that stimulation in the mouth. Yeah. So, and that I would say, reach out to your experts. I'm not an OT or anything, but I know some really amazing ones that I would reach out to and ask and just kind of pick their brain on how can we give some of that input just naturally with foods and things like that. You can do some things on the outside of the mouth, just some massage on the face. So we have, any games that you play, and you want to make sure that it's playful and it's fun and it's not stressful for them. So, because that could be a little bit different. So, and those are things that you can, definitely integrate throughout your day if the child's receptive to some of that. So I would say that would be a little bit of the prevention. The other part of prevention is reducing stress. And when we look at this and we go, what kind of stress do two-year-olds have? I'm like, they have a great deal of stress. And we've added to their stress just in the past 2 years. So when we think about this and Chaz, I think it makes sense that some of your kids at the age of two in your classroom are exhibiting biting behaviors because, 2 years ago, where were they? What was it like? Well, we had, we were shut down. We weren't receiving that social interaction and connection as much as we're accustomed to. So our twos really have grown into a lot of stress and were born into a lot of stress. So it does make sense. It does make sense. But transitions can be stressful. Changes, lack of structure can be very stressful. So I would think, lots of things to reduce stress would include having predictability. We talked a lot during that week of CD1 where we talk so much about the importance of visuals so that their day is almost like the whole entire day is choreographed and we've got pictures to really let them know we're doing this today. And it teaches them that and we're really approaching safety first. So we're helping to keep them safe. And so that's a big aspect of reducing the stress, I think. And I mean, there's so many other ideas too. The breathing strategies that we've used in conscious discipline are incredibly impactful in reducing stress for the adult and it does have an impact on the children as well and teaching them too. So I think those would be some of the prevention.
Okay. And I would say, side note, I would say that I've been doing a lot of downloading Calm and I just, it's something I've practiced before, but I recognize it seems to me that two-year-olds or just young children in general are so much more sensitive to it and it's so much easier for me to see it. I've done it with older kids too, but it just seems like there's I think maybe they're just more sensitive to energy or something. I don't know, but downloading Calm in the past few weeks or since whenever the conference was over, I have been able to see such a just clear behavioral impact and mood impact when I've done it in so many situations. And so I was a believer before, and it's something I practiced before. Like now I feel like I'm an advocate. So especially for younger children, is there something in there that like I'm recognizing it with younger children, or is it just because I went to your conference and maybe I'm just seeing it now more? Or
yes, all of that. And I gotta say, that just brings me so much joy, because you know, when we go into let's say our week-long institute, you know, you come in one way and you come out in some sort of personal transformation, which is exactly what you just said there. So I honestly believe that the person who transformed, who walked out differently, was you. So then you walked into your classroom differently, which of course our kids, our babies, are in particular births of three, are very receptive of your intention. So your intention might have made just a teeny tiny shift, and yes, it had an impact on their behavior. So that's a wonderful example of, you know, you didn't go in going, I'm going to change the child's behavior. You went in transformed and seeing behavior differently, just a tiny bit, because you walk, you know, you understood that before, but it almost highlighted it even more for you. So I think that's pretty exciting. It was you who made that little shift and are really noticing such an impact on their behavior.
Yeah.
What a testimonial, man.
Huge. And I just appreciate it. Anyways, moving on. I could like revel in that for a little while, but I want, there's a few other things I want to get to. By the way, I want you to tell the story about your sister and how the cuss words is honestly, I mean, we'll save that for the end maybe, but that was such a good story. It's a little off topic, but
yeah, that story probably needs its own podcast. You know, family stories, that's most of my material.
Oh man. Sure. Well, back to the biting. So the child's stressed. That could be a reason why they're frustrated, or they're trying to get the toy. It's effective. And you said reducing stressors is a way to do that. The baby doll circle time has been one way to kind of do that. That's not something you mentioned specifically, but just going to add that in there. Because I'm also, for people who listen, I'm also probably going to do some more baby doll circle time content. So you can know, you can make that connection. Now, I kind of want to go back to, and this is kind of the part where I'm struggling a little bit with the strategy to kind of, and I came up to you because it wasn't you who said this originally. I actually saw a video, kind of an older video from Dr. Becky Bailey, about the strategy to stop a child from biting. That was the way that it was worded. I know you're talking about transforming the behavior. Sometimes it's helpful to word it that way for the algorithm. But we're talking about transforming this biting behavior. And I agreed with 97% of it. It was one part.
It's very specific. Yeah.
Where I'm just like, oh, I just don't like that. And here's why. So I want you to kind of share what the strategy was to kind of, and then we'll talk about it we'll talk about it.
Great. And then of course, I'm curious about your 3% room
priority. And what I've been doing differently, because I'm like, there's so much I can take from it, but there's this one piece, I'm going to do it differently and see how it goes. And maybe I will have a revelation. If I try it this way, then maybe I'll be like, oh, they're right. And I'm like, okay, maybe I just need it to be, but go ahead and share.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the cool thing with this is that, you know, there's so many different ways to approach the behavior, right? And transforming it, of course. And it really, it's important to move forward with methods that feel comfortable for you, that resonate with you. So that's the beauty of this. It's kind of like, here's a smorgasbord of ideas, and you know, we got to go out there and try it. Like when I go into classrooms and do coaching and things like that, I'm like, I don't know, let's just give it a try. Let's just see what, you know, there's no, of course, exact formula, but something, but you got to have a plan, right? So we want to walk in with some sort of a plan that we can stick to. And that's going to be really important, especially in the classroom, right? So we want to make sure if we have two or three adults that we're approaching the biting in a similar, most similar fashion, if not exactly. That's going to be very helpful because different methods are going to confuse the child quite a bit. So one of the particular strategy that you're talking about, that you're mentioning was, when they initially go to maybe bite another child, or even kind of backing up a little bit, we call this like the shadow technique. Like you are white on rice with this child, like you are following that child everywhere and no matter what. So if they're about to bite, but they want, and you could tell because you're shadowing just them, you've got everybody else, all the other adults are definitely being mindful of the other kids and keeping them safe, but you're just with this one child. So you're going to catch on to, oh gosh, they're going over and I know exactly what they're going to get because they love that ball, but another child is holding it. And that let's say that strategy is to, as they're walking over there, so we try to catch before the bite and get the ball and hand it to them. So it could be that the ball's on the floor. Great. You just hand it to them and you give them that ball, but it's more likely that another child is holding the ball. Yeah. So we want to make sure, and again, we got to go back to, we want to make sure that we have a new skill that is going to be equally, if not more effective than the biting. So, and we're not filling out an accident report. So that's a yay. That's a win. So now, yes, it's, they're walking over towards that child. You know that they're about to bite them because that's what they've done notoriously, but we almost, what we're going to do is basically either, remove the ball from the other child. I don't love doing that. I will be honest with you. What I tend to do maybe is hand over hand with the other child to hand the ball over. And then yes, you probably now have a crying child who does not have a ball, and you have the child who actually didn't bite at that moment. So yes, I have a crying child, but I don't have a crying bit child. And so that's kind of the idea, and how you decide to do that, whether it be quickly grab another ball that they can hold and then redirect them without removing it from the other child. That's another practice. That's something that could also go well. I just have to make sure I have enough materials in the classroom and just have them available so that they can be effective. And really that idea is, then the child learns I can actually get the ball in a different kind of way. How do I get the ball now? Well, I take it from someone. Well, taking it from a child is better than biting the child to get the ball. So then that's kind of, and I want to see some of these behaviors as, or these, let's say, methods as a stepping stone.
Yeah.
And then now here's what I get. And then eventually, and here's, I'm doing this while the child is, of course, in a calm state. I got to practice that turn taking, that either give me or my turn or some sort of way that kids ask for a toy if you find that that's when they tend to bite the most. And so I've got to teach that a lot so that in those quick moments, they're more likely to use those methods to put their hand out. So eventually we go from I bite the child to get the toy to I take the toy to I ask, can I hold, you know, my turn? And then eventually I tap them on the shoulder and say, can I hold the toy? But a two-year-old, it's going to take a little, you know, some time there. So I kind of jump in with, here's a quick way to do it. Yeah. My turn. Here you go. So that's kind of what we have kind of walked through a little bit in the Institute.
Yeah. And I think even with the Dr. Becky Bailey video, she mentioned having like a necklace or something of some sort with like a washcloth or something, and to like, you know, kind of like put that in the child's mouth, or like to kind of stop the child from like biting, allow them to bite onto that, and then do the, you know, taking the ball or whatever the toy is away. And so,
you got to be like a ninja for that, because you got to move quickly for that. Yeah. That's you got to be prepared. But again, if you're the only one with that child, you have a better chance.
Yeah, and I get it. Like taking the ball from the other child is the stepping stone. You're trying to scaffold and trying to build on the skill. It's easier to learn to snatch and to grab than to learn, you know, turn please or my turn, right? And so I get that. And I really struggle with that. And I'll tell you what I do differently in a second. I struggle with the, and it's not a struggle with taking the toy away from the child, not because the child's going to cry. Like, that's fine. The child can cry. They're going to be, chances are it's not the only time that child's cried that day, right? It's normal, right? They're going to experience emotions. I'm cool with that. The way I struggle is it feels like I'm kind of sending the message that because this child is a child who has a tendency to bite, or this child is whatever. I don't know how this other toddler is perceiving it, but because for whatever reason, this child has priority over the toy that I'm playing with, and I don't have that power of free will to get it. It's not something where that child who's playing with the toy, they're not doing something that's harming themselves or someone else. So there's not a safety issue. They're not doing something like, you know, that is like shaming or hurting someone emotionally or physically. So that would be the only reason to kind of encroach on that free will. And from my perspective, to like, you're doing something unsafe, I need to keep you safe. And I guess it could be argued that reducing the behavior of biting from the child or teaching child a new skill quickly is a way that you're trying to keep things safe. Yeah, I think you could argue that, but I think for this child directly, it feels like I'm almost reinforcing, like almost people-pleasing tendencies for a reason that isn't, because this other child has a hard time. So you need, because this other child has a hard time, and has doesn't have the skills yet, that means you have a little bit less freedom or right to this toy, because this child wants it and he's having a hard time. That's where I struggle. Now, what do I do instead, right? And for me, it's about like, all right, what other skills can I use here? Like, it's about, you know, it's not about avoiding emotion or it's about how can we practice all the skills in our tool belt to work through this situation. This real situation that is difficult for, because this is for a toddler, but like these kind of things play out in adulthood too. There are people who, you know, adults who throw temper tantrums and don't have the skills yet for very good reasons. Trauma, or, you know, just had a bad day, didn't sleep, whatever the reason, right? Really good reason for them to not have the skills yet in that moment to be helpful, and they're maybe being harmful. And I believe that there's, you know, there's empathy that we can have for that person. There's also a boundary where I'm not going to let you, because you don't have the skills yet, encroach on the freedom of something else that someone has the right to do, right? Stand in line in grocery shop or play with that toy. So instead, what I do is first start off with the skill of assertiveness and say, like, you know, notice they're wanting it. Maybe, I mean, I haven't done like the towel in the mouth thing, but like, I think, cool. Yeah. I think that need to be met, if we can meet that need a different way, all for that, support that, highly believe in that. And then trying to practice the turn, please. And just really just going. And so for me, it's like, I'm kind of jumping. I'm not using that stepping stone. It's that this is how you get what you want. This is the way that you get what you want. You say turn, please, right? And if a child says, you know, yeah, they give the turn, which happens, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. I can't predict if it is or not. It's not my job to predict it. It's my job to kind of go with the flow, whatever it is, and just, all right, just use a different skill. So if they say they give up the turn and they give the truck or whatever, then I celebrate that child because they gave a turn to someone, asked for a turn, and they gave a turn to someone else. They cared about what someone else was wanting for this. Like, that is huge. And that's a big skill. So I'm going to use my skill of encouragement to celebrate that. Like, you did that. You gave him a turn. Like, you did. I might even do a little like connection ritual or something with them, right? And now the child has the toy that they want. They use the skill of assertiveness. They got it. And I, and this other child's kind of reinforced the behavior of like taking turns is something that we can, giving turns is something that is good. And it's something that's celebrated, which is also, I always think about like, how does it equate kind of in the adult world of like, yeah, you don't necessarily have, if you're a billionaire, you don't necessarily have to give your money to charity. But if you do, if you're someone who does, the natural consequence of that, people are going to celebrate that and talk about it. And that's just what it is. You don't have to, and no one's forcing you to, but if you do, we're going to celebrate it because that's also something hard to do. I understand why you wouldn't. Now, what if the child says no? It's the hard part. Child says no. You know, they're like, right? They do a little shoulder to the ear thing and they hold it tight because like, this is mine. This is a part of me. Like I'm still playing with this, right? Then I wait like for a little bit. I give a little bit of time for it to process, maybe turn please again. And like, okay, it's not happening. And I say, it looks like they're not ready to give you a turn. And if they're upset by that, I'm going to bring a little bit of empathy in there, be there for them. But I also will move to choices. And you're like, okay, you can choose to do this. You can choose to do this, right? And still then, they might not, it's probably like 50-50 chance. Sometimes they are going to make a choice. And those choices are based off of what I know about this child and kind of like, and what I think their needs are. And I'm kind of guessing. And sometimes I get it right. Sometimes I don't. They go to it and then they're good, right? And they got the choices. Now they learn how to like make a different choice when things don't go their way. And I equate this to like I always think about the pandemic, how our choices were limited, right? Or how like things were going the way that a lot of us didn't want to. You know, we wanted to go out and see each other and connect and all that stuff. But like the reality is that we couldn't do that. And the people who thrived in those situations, the businesses and the people are those who were able to recognize what their choices are within their power and were able to make those choices. And those people thought, and I'd say I was one of those people because I really started to, like, I was doing all the whole coaching and everything, like in schools and stuff. School started to shut down. I still had this like need to help and make an impact. And so I had to like, okay, what are my choices? And then like social media was a choice that I made. And because I was able to make that choice, that actually made it, improved my situation and my ability to impact and help people 100-fold at least. But sometimes they don't make those choices. And then if they don't, they really don't want to make a different choice. They really want the toy that this other person is playing with. The other person has chosen not to give them a turn at that moment. Then it's about just me being with that person and giving them empathy and love and connection and understanding until they're ready to make a different choice. And it doesn't last forever, right? And that child playing with that toy doesn't last forever. Like they, you know, we talked about like really a toddler playing with a toy, like 20 minutes tops. And they like forget about, they move on to something else. They only got two hands and they love to have two things in their hands, but there's a dilemma when they want something else. Yeah. And then they're like, oh man, I got to put something down or something like that. And then that's an opportunity for the other child to, you know, maybe then make that choice, right? And so that's the way that I navigate that situation. And I would love to hear what your thoughts are.
Yeah. And that's absolutely. And that's what we also recommend. I mean, that's what, you know, the seven powers of and seven skills of conscious discipline. So the skills include empathy, encouragement, all of those things. And it's, we don't walk into a situation, right, with only one skill. We've got just a multitude. But the big one that you mentioned, which is the skill of choices, is birthed from that power of, and you refer to it as free will, right? So do I believe I'm an agent of change, you know? And so a child who maybe, for both kids, the child who bites as well as the child who's been bit, right, starts to learn, you know, am I an agent of change? So for the child who bit, might potentially tap into the fact that, wow, I do have a choice. I could choose to bite to get the toy, or I can choose to put my hand out and say my turn and wait for that, or, you know, be coached through that process. So yes, I have that change and I have that potential to make that choice. So that's really, the choices are so big. And then for the child who perhaps did get bit, they also have a choice to either use their big voice or not. So, and then that's what's really going to tap into that assertiveness. So yes, absolutely. Adding in those elements, of course, of, you know, if here's the thing is if I catch before the bite, that's one thing. It's like, just celebrate and just assume that the planets are aligned and life is good. But it's when it's already too late. And even if you shadow the child, I mean, you know it, cause you're in the classroom, it happens right there in just a second. Yeah. And so, what we do in those moments is really going to also, impact. So if let's say they bit and then we go, it might be, ouch, they want soft touches. That's also quite helpful too, to add in, but then also for the other child who maybe did get bit, or just before they get bit, to be able to put their hand out to say, stop.
Yeah.
Stop. So, and they can choose to do that when they go to take a toy from them or whatever that is, to be able to say, stop. And then we can be there hopefully to transform some of that. And it just kind of depends on, you know, do we catch before the bite, during the bite, after the bite? You know, there's only so much you can do, after the bite, and after the bite, it's pretty much like it's already, the strategy has already been done at that moment. I bit, I got the toy, you know, so it's very hard at that moment, but, reducing that stress and that empathy piece in the form of a two-year-old might be, you know, let's go get a tissue for the child who's crying, or let's go get a Band-Aid so that we can put the Band-Aid on the child who we just bit, but not in a shaming way. We don't instead of a, you know, the energy of, look what you did to them. You know, that's going to be shameful and that's going to be laced with shame, but instead to show that our behavior has an impact on others. And yes, we do have choice to be able to say, you know, see their face is saying, ouch, or see their face is saying, stop, touch me soft, or say my turn. So there's lots of different things that you can add in. But I absolutely agree that yes, empathy, encouragement, celebrating when it happens, and also celebrating even afterwards when they give them a Band-Aid. There you go, you did it.
Yeah,
you gave them a Band-Aid. You know, something there, which is very different than a forced apology, because that's not going to be effective. Yeah. But just sort of, and we're not forcing them to do any of that.
Right.
Asking, would you be willing to get a tissue so that they can wipe their eyes? So we want to show them that the helpful behaviors are the ones that we are going to put more value on and more intentionality into that. If so, yes and yes, and add all of that for sure.
Mm. Yeah, I think the piece that you mentioned and kind of focused on that I didn't is the person who got bit. It's teaching them that skill of assertiveness, the person who might be getting bit, right? I think a lot of times in these moments, I'll say something like, like what I just said of, you know, they're not ready to give you a turn yet. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of really talking to the child who's really trying to get it. But I agree that I probably could do a little bit more of the assertiveness for the child who potentially could have gotten bit or did get bit. How well do you, because I'll say how well, because you know I've done teaching the skill, I've taught the skill of assertiveness, the stop and the hand up. I don't think it gets their attention, does it? How helpful have you seen it be in terms of like stopping the bite? Or is that something more that we are, and I guess my concern is like, oh, is this like a safety concern that we need to put more focus on what we do and less on what the child does, and like sprinkle that in there is like, yeah, this is a skill that you need to do, but it's really still like making sure that we take on that it's still our responsibility to stop the bite. Like, you get what I'm saying here? Am I?
Yeah, I think, you know, and you know, I go back to, well, what can you control? Right. And we can only control our own behavior. And yes, our behavior can have an impact on them. So I think that's the piece that I know when I first learned about conscious discipline was the most empowering piece, when I realized that my job was not to change their behavior, but it was to definitely transform mine, better mine, you know, all of that, and fill myself with the skills that I needed, of course, with the perception also, yeah, with a different perception. And so I think that has so much value and so much power. However, yeah, there is of course so much that we can do. I think that prior to the bite, and I keep going back to this quite a bit with a lot of the teachers that I work with as well, is you don't, let's say with upper grades, elementary, you know, you don't teach a math concept when they're stressed out and having a tantrum or having frustration. No, we teach them when they are in their thinking brain, when they're ready to learn, right? So the same thing here, you know, teach those skills when you're in just natural play and things are going well. That's the time. Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing, as far as educators too, I don't know about you, but sometimes I would learn like something new to do with a child and a new sort of, here, try this language piece or whatever. And then I would try it with the child who would exhibit the most challenging behaviors. And I would try that with them first. And it was like, what am I doing? And then I'd be like so frustrated because it wasn't effective. And I was going, why don't you try this first with the most cooperative child in my class? That is going to be like, yes, of course I'll do this ritual with you. Yes. You know, and then build up my confidence, feel pretty good, while at the same time, the kids that maybe have more of those challenging behaviors are also observing. They're watching everything. They're in everybody's business, aren't they? You know, sometimes we kind of go through that as teachers, like, I don't just have one child. I've got like, you know, 18. And what do you think the other 18 are doing? They're right there by your side. They're looking, they're listening. Because we're modeling all of this. So I think there's great power in that as well. So teaching the skills when they are ready to receive them in play, and build up your confidence, because this is hard. This is hard stuff, and it'll wear us down.
When you first start, if you're a beginner at a new skill, don't start on hard mode. You know, start on beginner mode. And then also too, thinking about us, all the other children in your classroom, not as like an extra burden, but as like other social skill teachers in the classroom. 100%. That is so true. That is so true. All right, I want to end it with you. I'm going to two quotes from you from the week that stick out the most to me. And I feel like I've heard quotes like this, but like the way you said it connected with me in a way that was just a little different, that really was really sticky. And then you share any last thoughts that you would like to share on the topic, or for those out there, I have an audience of parents and teachers. So the first one is the face-to-face connections on the outside create neural connections on the inside, is the first one. And the other one is, I teach it because I need it. That is such, that one really, I said that this morning to somebody. And I was like, yeah, I was at this conference. And like, she said this, so And that's 100% how I feel. So what's any last words you'd like to say before you get off?
I think, you know what, this is all doable. This is all doable. It's all manageable. And I've been able to do it. So you all can do it as well. Regulate yourself first. It is definitely key. It is definitely the hardest part of all of that, but it does make such a world of difference. And the more you practice it, and the more you believe it to be true and make it your own too, that's one of those things too. That's why I love that, you know, in how you've shared your story. It's take this great information and make it your own so that it is truly coming from your authentic self.
What's my name? What's my name?
What's my name?